toxic life as one of your friends on both phones, let alone to be intoxicated.
You have a prepaid call from
William A. Shapiro.
An inmate at the California State Prison, San Quentin. This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
I had to be intimidated in time, which became walkways of San Quentin death row, and without a gang, without any people around you.
So after running to be on death row, and you didn't really understand the prison workout system so much, but then you said we're going to do 75 sets of it. To me that seems extreme, so I'm wondering if there's a danger of overtraining, wearing yourself out so that you're...
That's actually funny. I'll tell you why. That's a good one. I'll tell you what.
Welcome to Death Row Diaries. I am Matt Ralston.
And I am William Nogueira.
And Bill, today we are going to discuss a case. This case was recommended to us by a Patreon subscriber. And, you know, we said that we'll cover, for a limited time, we'd cover all of our Patreon subscribers if they had a case to request. And we'll probably do that again in the future. And we're still getting to those if you're listening. But this one's really interesting, and I didn't hear anything about it until you brought it up, until the listener brought it up, and I think it's just because the guy's Canadian, and there's not always a ton of crossover between the media there with their ridiculously low-budget state-run media that they have in Canada. So anyway, this is really interesting, and we're going to get to it. I first want to remind everyone to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Death Row Diaries, as well as patreon.com/Death Row Diaries, where you will get bonus episodes that are not otherwise available. Bill, before we start, how's the mood in the prison? Our last episode, we discussed that, you know, there was a lot of disappointment and a lot of kind of ill will going on due to the ruling that is for the time being going to prohibit youth offenders from having a chance at parole. And you had said last time that there was really a cloud hanging over the prison because of this. So how's it looking now?
Well, yeah, it's a mood that's still here. A lot of guys, as I mentioned, are very disappointed that although the youth offenders, they're never going to get out of prison, and they've been excluded from the law, which, as I explained before, if a youth offender even has 1,000 years to life after 25 years, he is eligible for parole, which doesn't mean he's going to get out, only that he has the ability to go before a hearing, and if he is then deemed rehabilitated, he has a chance to get out. That's all it means. But most of these guys that are youth offenders that have life without the possibility of parole have been excluded from that law, and they're very upset. I mean, there's a lot of guys who've quit school, have quit these self-help groups in order to better themselves because they feel really disappointed. Like, what's the use? They're never going to let us out no matter what we do. But there's also people that no matter what the system does, they're going to continue to better themselves because they know that they committed a crime and they want to make an amends to it. So we have different state of mind at this prison.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, when I first heard this case, and by the way, thank you to the subscriber that suggested this case. This case, you can imagine me, Matt, I'm sitting there and I start reading this case and I start jumping up and down because this case really does, again, prove my thesis on serial killers. You know, you mentioned this guy he's a different animal. This guy is not a guy who was abused as a kid. He was not a guy who was uneducated. It's not a guy who experienced trauma in his life. This kid, well, Russell Williams, it's David Russell Williams, by the way, is, by all accounts, a normal kid. He likes to play pranks. He's accepted by his peers, born in Britain in 1963, educated at well-to-do schools, went to the University of Toronto. He's a decorated military man with tours of duty in the Middle East. He has a master's degree in defense studies from the Royal Military College of Canada. This guy is what you would call a perfect human being. A good guy, defends his country, has married, loves his wife. His wife has nothing bad to say about this guy. The community likes this guy. This guy is actually named the commander of an entire base. On top of that, he also flies the Queen Elizabeth around the country and the Prime Minister. Let me call back.
Thank you for using Global Tel Link.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah, this guy's like the envoy to the monarchy of Canada. He's the commander of an Air Force base. Is it Air Force or Navy? Damn it.
Air Force.
He flies jets. He's basically the character in the action movie who's the hero, and then he has to end up avenging something. He's like he's Harrison Ford on Air Force One or something.
Yeah, this guy, I was actually reading his military dossier or his resume, and I'm blown away. I mean, listen to this stuff, Matt. Promoted to captain in January 1, 1991. He's then posted to the 434 Combat Squadron. Okay? From there, he flies CC-144 Challengers in electronic warfare and coastal patrols. He then goes to become a major and becomes the director of the General Military's Careers in Ottawa. And then he skips there, jumps to becoming the commanding officer at Camp Mirage. It's a secretive logistics facility that's believed to be located in Dubai. But no one even knows about this thing because it's top secret. This guy is one of the highest commanding officers in the Canadian Air Force. And that's not even the top of it. Listen to this. He is sworn in as wing commander of the CFB Triton by the ongoing commander at Brigadier General David Hood. This guy is a climber. He is by no way, shape, or form the kind of guy that you can associate with rape, murder, pedophilia, any of those stuff. But that's exactly what this guy is. He is a perfect chameleon. He hides in plain sight, married, happily married on top of that. His neighbors think he's a great guy. He's commanding the people he commands, and the people who are above him think that this guy is basically Harrison Ford. He's a guy that if you want someone to take care of something for you in the military, this is the guy.
Yeah. And yet,
this whole... Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well... True, but no kids though. Usually conservative guys that are institutional men like this, they usually have 3, 4, 5 kids. That's a little weird. I'm not saying it makes him a serial killer.
Well, you know, maybe his wife is part of the problem. She wants, or not really the problem, but maybe she wants to practice, you know, not having children. For whatever reason, he marries a woman. And look, she is also not some just a housewife who stays at home, doesn't understand her husband. Listen to this. He marries her in 1991. So they stayed married all the way till he was arrested as a serial rapist, killer, / pedophilia. Her name is Mary Elizabeth Harriman. And she is the associate director of the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Canada. So this woman is very well educated, very intelligent, and yet he hides it from her as well.
Yeah, yeah. And so what he's hiding is that when he returns from leave and comes back to his home in Canada, he's mostly for a while occupying himself, as we've seen quite often, with breaking into women's homes and stealing their undergarments, and in this case, dressing up in these undergarments and taking photos of himself and then cataloging the undergarments and photos very meticulously. That seems to be his main hobby.
Yeah, he seems to have a bit of OCD. This guy, you mentioned, he categorizes the underwear, he takes pictures of them. So what they know about this guy is around September 8 and 9, 2007, this guy willingly starts breaking into neighbors' cottages in this place named Tweed. And he basically, as you mentioned, breaks in the house. He photographs himself in pornographic poses with young girls' underwear. If the listeners would like to just look this guy up, look at the photographs associated with this guy. He took pictures of himself. He stole the underwear. And in a lot of cases, he would masturbate with these underwear on in the kids' bedrooms. So these break-ins start to escalate. He starts breaking into the houses, sometimes breaking in twice, first to find out if the victims are there, what their schedule is, how many people live there, and then he leaves and comes back. We've seen this type of action from other serial killers. One to be mentioned would be D'Angelo, who is known as the Golden State Killer. He started off as the East Bay Ransackler, and that name didn't stick because he was breaking into homes, stealing underwear, doing things of that sort. And then he does something very similar to what Williams does, is that he escalates. You know, he breaks into houses by cutting the screen or forcing a window open or picking a lock, because this guy's really good at what he does. And then he burglarizes things. He takes women's underwear. He takes brassieres, panties. He leaves messages on computers. He does all these little weird things. He actually broke into 82 homes. Think about that. 82. And he stole more than 1,400 pairs of underwear and brassieres and lingerie. And as Matt mentioned, he took pictures of himself in all these different positions with the children's clothes on, because these were little girls and young girls' garments.
He's looking more for, I guess I didn't read this part. I thought they were women. So he's doing like pedophile. He's looking for girls and adolescents and things like that.
Yes, the victimized girls were young girls as well as young women, and this guy had no problem with it. I think one of the photographs I have of him is he's wearing a little camisole that a small, maybe 11, 12-year-old little girls would wear, and he puts them on, and he takes all these crazy poses, including, you know, being on his elbows and knees, and all kinds of crazy stuff, which makes you wonder, like, hey, is this guy homosexual? Is he, what's going on with this guy?
Well, also, does he have a normal-sized Johnson?
Yeah, it would be kind of hard to hide that in a freaking pair of underwear, right?
Yeah. I mean, Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, it's actually interesting you say that, because I had never thought of that until you mentioned it. And now I'm over here searching through all the photographs I have of this clown, looking for these freaking photographs of him standing in front of the camera, thinking like, hell, man, this guy must have a miniature-sized freaking Johnson, right?
I mean, he must, because I don't know where it would go,
Yeah, there's a picture of him standing. This photo was taken in 2007, March 11th at 12:47 p.m., and it's noted as number 5, and he's standing there, and yeah, you don't see nothing, so this guy must be a puny guy, you know, golly.
Yeah.
Wow. So look how this guy progresses. So we have spoken about this a number of times, that serial killers, serial rapists really are born this way. This guy's a classic case. He's not abused or anything. And it takes him longer than other serial rapists, killers, etc., to begin to really take off. And we see it around 2007. So he's already a full-fledged adult. He's not a kid lighting fires, torturing animals. But as I've mentioned numerous times, every serial rapist slash killer is different. They're wired a bit different. Some start earlier, some start later. In this guy's case, he started off later. Now, could he have...
This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
Could he have started earlier and no one knew about it? Absolutely. And from what I see, there seems to be evidence of prior actions in this similar realm. But since we only have the record of what we're being told and seen and read and we're reading about, we'll stick to that. But we see a pattern, which is that taking photographs, posing with underwear, stealing them and taking them home with him, only seems to satisfy him for a certain amount of time. And then he graduates. It's like the photographs are a precursor to him, are his fantasies. And now he wants to start living out those fantasies because they're no longer exciting him to the level that he needs to be excited. So what does he do? So what he does is what we've seen happen numerous times. He graduates and he does so quickly. In 2007, he starts. But soon after that, he becomes the Tweed Creeper. That's what they call him. In 2009, two women in Tweed are attacked in September. One of the women is, well, I'm sorry, there's actually three women, but one of them is sexually assaulted. She is photographed. He takes pictures of himself having sex with her. He films it. They find semen on photographs in the house. So he was actually taunting the people. He left messages on a computer. And then he puts a hand signal as a little, like a drawing doodle, where he is taunting if police are seeing this, that he wants to terrorize a little bit. So he's getting his jollies off of taunting these people. And then he really quickly after that graduates, meaning he likes the sexual intercourse forcefully. He ties the women up, he does stuff. But then it's like it's not enough for him. He got to a certain plane, but very quickly he escalates. And we've seen it in other serial killers. It takes a little bit longer. The Golden State Killer took years. This guy virtually jumps within less than a couple months. He goes from prowler, burglar, sexual deviant, taking photographs, stealing underwear, to serial rapist, and then jumps to serial, killer. And I say this because although he only killed two women that he knew for, the way that he was escalating and what he was doing tells me that he would have killed after this very quickly, and it would have escalated even. He would have had 20, 30 victims had they not caught him. He was caught because of the dumbest reasons, but he then, of course, becomes a killer. And Matt, you've probably looked a little bit at what's going on with this guy and what he did, but this guy right here is very, the only way you can describe this guy is not only a sexual deviant, serial killer, but he also feels a certain justification when he does this because of the amount of taunting that he does and how he likes to be close to.
You have 60 seconds remaining.
Let me call you back and let's discuss how he does, how his trophies and the women that he killed, how it goes from a murderer to obviously a serial killer. Okay.
Yeah, so in regard to these trophies, before we get into it, if you could clear something up, because I'm confused. So he's stealing young girls' underwear and stuff and posing in them. So clearly he's got some pedophile tendencies, to say the least. Yet when he escalates, he kills adult women. Why isn't he not trying to kill children?
Well, that's a very good question. So his psychology is really a mystery, but with these type of men that do this and kill, sometimes they have cross wires. And what I mean by that is we also see him in this tendency to pose sexually with the women's underwear or the young girls' underwears and camisoles and whatever. So that would suggest, as I mentioned earlier, a bit of a man trapped in a woman's body or a girl's body that he wants to pose with these clothes on. He puts himself in sexually explicit positions and takes photographs of himself. So there's a bit of a guy, there's a bit of confusion on his part, but I don't think it's confusion. It's no different than when a man is saying he's bisexual. He likes to have sex with women, but he also likes men. Serial killers can be the same thing. Look, they're human. A lot of the same tendencies that normal humans have, these guys have as well. In this case, you see this guy posing in girls' underwear in suggested positions, would suggest that he may be a woman trapped in a man's body. He wants to feel like he is in these positions because he wants to have sex with a man. These are all possibilities, and they're probably all truths about him as well. This guy, if he was able to evolve more, and we would have seen the evolvement, we would have evidence that he then possibly could also then at some point kill men or kill boys, mm-hmm. and even girls. So, as I said, I'm speculating here, but the evidence suggests this, and I'll tell you why I'm leaning towards this. Because all the classic signs are there. And let me explain. So, after he rapes, he then starts to stalk. He finds, he attends, you know, golf tournaments. He's taking photo ops. He then targets a woman who is basically a technician, a traffic technician at a base that he knows. And it's a woman. She's 37 years old. She's a military traffic technician. She's a corporal. Her name is Marie France. And I don't want to mess this last name. I believe it's Camus. My French is not that great. But she is attacked in her home by this guy. He basically rapes her. He tapes himself raping her. He ties duct tape around her mouth. He begins to not only sexual assault her, but strangle her. He takes pictures of her nude. He does a lot of the things he did in the houses prior to that, but now he beats them with flashlights to kill them, to render them unconscious. He tries to strangle them. He does all of these things, and then here comes the taunting part. Once he kills her, and she is discovered, he writes condolences letters to the woman's family after they find the body been discovered. He offers to help during this difficult time. Look, this guy, that's part of the torment, and part of the, he gets off on tormenting people and being close to the investigation, classic signs of a serial killer. Okay? So it doesn't end there, because another victim of his is a woman by the name of Jessica Lloyd, and she's 27 years old. Russell notices her running on a treadmill through her apartment window. So he breaks into her house to confirm she lives alone while she's not there. And then he comes back on January the 28th while she's asleep. And like his previous victim, Mary, he ties Jessica up, blindfolds her, duct tapes her. He photographs her throughout the assault and the sexual assault on her with videotaping camera. He videotapes as he rapes her. Afterwards, he bundles her up in his truck and takes her to his weekend getaway in Tweed. Again, he sexually assaults her, tapes the event, photographs it. Then he kills her by striking her in the head with a flashlight and then strangling her with a rope. Very similar to what he did before, but here is the evolvement. Here is where I'm telling you is right. I knew immediately this guy, not only is he a serial killer, but he was going to become a very prolific one. Here's what he does. He buries her in a shallow grave in a secluded area on Cary Road, a few meters from his cottage. So, what does that tell me? That tells me that he takes the trophy with him, like many serial killers have, and buries them close to where he is. We've seen the clown prince of serial killers, Wayne Gacy, bury children under his house in the cellars so he can live with them.
So he can, like, he can almost look over and see the spot, like, where the dirt is a little different or whatever. Like, he can see exactly where she is what you're saying.
Exactly. And he will visit that. And I'm sure, had he not been caught, he would have visited this grave along with the many other women who he would have raped and killed. This guy is not a guy who had only two murders. This guy is a serial killer. He just didn't have a chance to really go on that breaking neck speed killing spree that most of them do. He was getting there. He was about to shift into a different gear when he was picked up because he was going through a checkpoint. He had left tire marks in the victim's homes, and one of the checkpoint guys called in and said, we have a car matching the description of a car that was seen very close to one of the murder victim's homes, and we have that car here. The tires match. So they did some investigating. They found out who it was, and they asked him to come in, and he came in, and the dummy was wearing the boots that he wore the crime scenes where police had the boot prints as well as the size, and they matched his perfectly. And the truth is that this guy didn't hide it. As soon as he started integrity, he confessed to everything. He confessed. He took the law enforcement officers to his home. He gave them the computer, showed them how to open the secret files that he had in plain sight, but you'd have to be an expert or understand exactly what you were looking for to find it. He found, escorted them and took them to where he buried the other young woman, and he asked for a map. He said, just give me a map. He drew them a map, and then he gave them his treasure trove of stolen items. Things he took from victims, from all the homes. All in all, he confessed to more than 88 burglaries, the sexual assaults, and the murders. And he has now been placed in prison because of those things.
Yeah, you can see the interrogation online. And he makes a feeble attempt to deny the culpability. But then almost within a few minutes, he just immediately gives it up. And he's pretty deferential to the police. Almost, almost in a military way. He seems very respectful of the police and the job they're doing, and even in the confession, he doesn't seem like a serial killer. He seems like a normal guy. Like he's kind of just factually laying this out. He's not lying. He's a military guy through and through. I mean, he's just saying like, and then I did this, and here's where this is, and it's weird. It's not a typical confession, I don't think.
Yeah, no. Obviously, you know me, man. You know me. I would love to talk to this guy. I want to know. I would like to get in his head and just ask him. And I'm sure he'd tell me when it started. When he started fantasizing about putting little girls' panties on. Why taking photographs of himself in these positions. I would want to understand when it all started, when he realized he was different. Because some kids do so, I'm talking about killers, do so very early on. They start experimenting to figure out who they are. This guy's a very intelligent guy. Or has he fooled all of us? Did this start years before and no one knew about it? Did he hide it so well that no one, including his wife, since 1991, was he able to fool her too? I would love to know the answers. Unfortunately, if a detective or a reporter or a person meets him, he's not going to tell them the truth. He's not going to admit that part, the reasoning, the traits, all those things that I look for, which would take me a couple of decades to really get in his head by being around him to find out, is what I'm looking for. And unfortunately, we're not going to get that, because this guy, he's very interesting to me, and he could lead to a lot of answers to serial killer and what a serial killer is, how to develop, including that they are actually born and not made.
Yeah, I mean, unless he was, well, yes to all of that, but he could have been doing this earlier. We don't know. I don't know what training is like in Canada when you're overseas and doing things. I'm sure it's hard to get away from your base, but at the same time, we've seen this before, maybe not as much in modern times, but you're in like a third world country. Maybe not that hard to sneak away, kill a couple children, and go back to the base, right?
Absolutely. I mean, they have leave time, and some of these military bases are in the middle of nowhere. They go to a town, and it's very easy to have someone bring you somebody, or sex workers. There's a lot of different things he could have experimented with that we don't know about. That he went on tours of duty to the Middle East is very eyebrow-raising. That he spent so many time in different bases around the world. He flew these huge transportation planes. He is, by all accounts, a pilot. He flew Queen Elizabeth, the Prime Minister of Canada, around. He could have very easily, while dropping somebody off, taking a leave of absence, or taking a couple of days off, or a layover, and very easily did something in a different country and kept going. So, honestly, you know, they say, you know, never, you shouldn't shit in your own backyard. Maybe that's part of it, too. He became that guy. And then later on in life, he felt confident enough to start doing it in his own backyard. Literally, in his backyard. Let me call you back, man. Hey, man.
Yeah, so I think we're kind of wondering the same thing on the same page here. What if the murders in Canada, his most brazen for sure, what if that was his escalation? I mean, I don't know the guy's itinerary. I'm not pretending to. I don't think anyone knows it. He was the commander of the base. If who's he answering to if he's AWOL for a couple days? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. He had ultimate power. When you're the commander of a base, when you have military rank where you can tell a person under you, shut the hell up, or do this, do that, that is huge. And very easily he could have hid his actions. But we're not going to know that. I mean, if I were to be able to investigate the case thoroughly, go through archives, what he was doing at certain times, maybe a trail can be sniffed out. But now he is in prison for life. This is the part that really, he has life imprisonment with a possibility of parole after 25 years. So you have a man who was really in his 50s already, doing all kinds of stuff, very mature, intelligent, fully developed man, and he has possibility of parole after 25 years. That's pretty crazy, huh? He has 86 known victims, including two murders. Who knows how many more people are victim? I say that his wife is also a victim in this. She is actually being sued by some of the victims for a substantial amount of money. Their argument is that there is no way that she could have not known that her husband was a predator, and that she not only helped them, but that she participated in his, you know, midnight excursions. Well, let me just say this in reference to that. I think that the people who are suing, I believe they're completely off base. I understand that you're victims, and I understand that he is to be held accountable for what he did. However, I believe his wife is a victim as well. This guy is not an ordinary guy, and we've seen serial killers very easily hide this from their wives because nobody is sitting there wondering if their husband's a freaking serial killer. His wife had no idea.
I'm sure you're correct. It makes me wonder. The thing that makes me wonder is he's got boxes of this stuff. I mean, I've lived with women. I can hardly hide a bottle of whiskey if I want to without them finding it. You know, they like to go through shit. You know, oh, where's the Christmas decorations? Oh, what the hell is this? I mean, how is he hiding this stuff that well in the home for that many years? To me, that's maybe he's just really good at it. But I don't know. So you don't think she knew? You don't think she suspected anything?
No. Well, let's look at his background. He's a military guy. Honey, these boxes are top secrets. You can't go into this stuff. It's against the law. You know, we could be, you know, whatever. He could have hid some of that stuff for a time being, switched it from a storage facility or at the base, and then brought it to his house as he wanted to look at it. Mm-hmm. There are certain things that a person with that classic A personality could have gotten away with because he's so dominating. He more than likely dominated his wife. And she had no reason to believe that he was anything other than the highest ranking guy of the military base with, you know, with people that he rubs elbow with, like the Queen of England, for God's sake, the Prime Minister of Canada. So I think in his case, it'd probably be a lot easier to hide something from his spouse than most guys who live in a normal suburb and their wife's going through for Christmas decorations or whatever the hell. He probably controlled everything. And being a high-ranking climber in the military, more than likely he was a micromanager and a control freak.
Man, imagine being able to play that top secret card, right? Like, who's texting you at midnight? Like, I can't tell you that. That's
right. Yeah, I can't reveal that. It's the Prime Minister, and we're in a top secret thing because we're going to bomb Afghanistan tomorrow. Oh, sweetheart, really? Absolutely. You know?
Yeah. So he got caught. His tires, this was like his kind of tooling around weekend vehicle, and he kept driving it around after the murders, and so they matched the tires. I know there's some forensic stuff they can do with tires, like some tires have stuff missing out of them and unique tire tracks. I kind of feel like a lot of that's bullshit, but either way, they matched the tires, and like that's you know, he wasn't that good at it in that case. You know, I guess maybe that points to these being his first two, because isn't that kind of a rookie mistake, you know?
Well, you would think so. But again, usually people don't look at someone unless red flags go up. So if you see a guy walking on the street, he looks like hell, he looks like a doctor. You know, his hair is cut correctly. He's wearing a suit. He drives a Beamer. You're not thinking right away, gang member. No red flags for gang members. This guy, same thing. He's driving around the car that he drives. No red flags. He's actually, when he pulls up somebody, pulls out his badge, he's a freaking, the damn commander of a goddamn fucking, the entire base. Who's going to question him? I think that he probably thought that he'd get away with it because no one's going to look at him because who he is. Power is what he had. And power seems to draw attention away from you. That's really what he's doing. You know, I do believe that this guy made a lot of dumb mistakes. He got caught very quickly here, or I'm sorry, in Canada. But that he had other victims prior to this is not out of the question. Could have been in a different country. So that's possible. But also, it's very possible that he started very late. And as I mentioned earlier in this episode, serial killers are different. Some of them start early, some of them start when they're around 27, some of them start much later. It usually depends on who you are. And this guy seems, from all indications, that it is possible that he had victims prior to this, but it's more probable that he started late in life.
So what do you think of this armchair piece of psychology? This guy is disciplined. He's one of the most ultimately disciplined people in the world. He's an elitely disciplined person, you know, to get to, you know, control this base and fly these aircrafts around. And so what if his discipline led him to fight this and fight it and fight it? And that's why it didn't turn into what it did until he was a middle-aged guy.
I think it's very possible. And you're right. This guy is about control. He's about discipline. And maybe he had a different outlet before he got married in 1991. Or maybe during his marriage, he had an outlet which allowed him to control that urge. Remember, I always talk about serial killers have an impulse, a tick they can't control. Most of the serial killers, if not all the serial killers that we and I on Death Row Diaries have gone through, talked about, discussed, evaluated, examined, have, none of them have the discipline that this guy had. So it's very possible.
Yeah, because there's pedophiles that are pedophiles, but they never act on it because they have some kind of moral conscience. And that's just, you know, I don't know what percentage of them it is, but I have heard stories of that they know it's wrong and so they don't do it. And so clearly, I'm sure, there must be some serial killers that have some kind of outlet that basically are born serial killers, but they never kill anyone, right?
Very possible. And as I said, outlets are something different. And this guy, he had an outlet, obviously, or he was able to contain it. And when he could no longer contain it because it was just gnawing at him, he didn't have that period of experimentation as most 13, 14, 15, 16 years old do when they're lighting fires, torturing animals, and doing other things. He didn't have that period because he was so disciplined. He went to, you know, school, college, master's degree, military, and then at some point in his life, it's so big he no longer can control it. He jumps to doing it, and it takes off quickly. 2007, and it just escalates from burglary, stealing underwear, taking pictures, posing, etc., to rape, and then ultimately, boom, to killing. And it happens within a very short period of time.
So we both know this guy's a serial killer when we look at the markers, you know, the sexual gratification. Yet in a textbook academic definition, he only has two victims. So does that still make him a serial killer, according to everyone?
Well, according to the people who don't know what the hell they're talking about, yeah, absolutely. And if you're going by definition, the FBI defines a serial killer person who killed three or more people in success. Yeah, I know the whole freaking literature. It's correct for most of the part. This is a different case. This is a guy who just got caught prior to becoming, by definition, what a serial killer was. He's a serial killer. Look, anybody who argues with me at this point is a freaking moron, okay? They don't know what the hell they're talking about. And I proved you because he buried that girl really close to him, yards away from his home. He did so because, like serial killers, he wanted to be next to one of his monumental moments. That moment that he can come back and relive it over and over and over. I'm willing to bet you money that had they not caught him, he would have continued to bury women around his cottage. Because that's who he is. And I'm sorry if other people disagree with this. Again, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. I've spent more time with serial killers than anybody on earth. I know what they do and what they don't do. And that is one of the biggest markers around the world, is how he escalated and what he did next, which was the...
Yeah, so yep. he's 61 years old now. And he you know, for the most part, led a healthy lifestyle. He was in pretty good to great shape. You know, he's a military guy. He wasn't a drug addict, any of these things. Can you put it past Canada to let this guy out at some point? Like, they'll point to his military service. Oh, there's only two victims. Oh, this guy was a national hero. You know, Canada, man, I like Canada, but they do some shit real backwards up there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how they would define, they don't have him listed as a serial killer, so he has two murders. You know, he could very easily speak to a board, have a lot of influential people talk on his behalf. It's possible. He's eligible for parole after 25 years, so that puts him around, what, 2035.
So he
another
would be
11 years.
Yeah, so he'd be 72 years old.
Yeah, so I mean, anything's possible. I don't know the judicial system or the prison system or the parole hearings that they have in Canada. Sure, it could be argued that this guy, I'm sure his, if he still has some kind of influence, he could have psychiatrists, psychologists come in. And this guy's not dumb. Very intelligent guy. I'd say his IQ is up there between 138 and 142. Intelligent. So there's a possibility. Or, after that much time in prison, don't want to get out. 72, what is he going to do? Lost his wife. She divorced him. He has lost everything. So who knows?
Yeah. Well, maybe he'll kill himself. I'm kind of surprised he hasn't tried. Anyway, it's been interesting.
He did try.
Oh, he did.
By the way, he did try. Yes, he did try to kill himself. Didn't call you back. So
okay.
He cuts off.
Okay. Yeah. So he tried to kill himself shortly after he was arrested, I assume.
Yeah, I think that what's really going to seal his fate is what he did to a little girl. He broke into her bedroom. And he left a message on her computer after he had, you know, taken photographs of her underwear, and he put the word merci, merci, which is thank you in French. So that's not a good thing. He also laid in her bed and masturbated. So all these things he photographed and logged. So I mentioned before, he kept photos, videos, logs. He even kept reports, detailed reports of the police and how they were reporting the crimes, how they were logging it in their crime database. So this guy did a lot of stuff that's going to piss a lot of people off, which is to, he made fun of the system. He was part of the system, and he did things to bring light to those things. That pissed a lot of people off. And remember, the military in Canada stripped them of all his honors, his rank, his pension. They took everything from him. So maybe he won't get out. Maybe a parole board won't grant him that because he might have a lot of these victims. And because they did sue his ex-wife, I imagine these people's, these victims' families will be at his parole hearings really highlighting what he did and how he escalated. So, honestly, I don't know, Canada, that he's eligible for parole doesn't mean he's going to get out.
Yeah, but do you think he still has a couple Air Force buddies who, you know, like, well, you know, Russ, I can't reconcile what he did, but we were in Afghanistan together, and he's a good man, and, you know, and then next thing you know, that guy's like the, you know, Secretary of State or something over there. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Look, everything that's written about this guy says that he's been disowned, that they stripped him of his rank. Sure, all that may be true, but you're absolutely right. He could have buddies that went to the Middle East with him and fought. He was there fighting with them. And the guy becomes the head of state or the prime minister. And he sends his buddy a letter and says, man, look, I just need help. This guy's going to remember what he did for him. It's possible. Any of those things are possible. Let's hope it isn't true, because Russell Williams is a serial rape. Russell Wilson is a serial rapist, serial killer, pedophile. And if you let him out, he more than likely will do it again.
Yeah. Well, thank you for suggesting this case, listener, who we won't name. And it was really interesting. Until next time, when we will be back with another... Jesus Christ, I can't talk. Thank you for... Thanks for suggesting this case. It was really interesting. Oh, man. I need a cup of coffee or something stronger. We'll be back next week. We appreciate you guys listening. Until then, I've been Matt Ralston.
And I'm William McGarrow. Stay safe. Be aware of your surroundings. Your life could depend on it. We'll see you next time.